Chapter 32. A New Darkness. The Tantamon was the last ship remaining to the Legio Solaria. Three of its dropship slots were unoccupied. The hull of the conveyor itself bore extensive damage, and yet it was luckier than its sister ship. The Artemisia was dead upon the plains of Beta Garmon III. Its landing craft were broken wrecks littering the mountain around the ruins of the Cathedra Telepathica, brought down as it ferried engines from half a dozen legios to the world. The picture of the legio's reduced status continued within. The Tantamon's halls echoed to the rare footsteps of survivors. Every level of the legio had suffered massive depletion. Deleuze, Secutari, Skitari, tech priests, knights, and most evidently god machines. Not a single dropship was full. One of the three was empty completely. Abhani Luzmahana walked the silent halls alone, heading for the dropship hastily reconsecrated to be fit for First Maniple, where the last of the Legio gathered. She joined a thin stream of people who spoke few words. Titan crew shocked with the death of so many sisters, tech priests mumbling prayers for their dead machine charges, their red and white robes tied tight with black mourning bands. They all walked so slowly. None of them had any energy remaining. The great aft war gates of the dropship reared up. They were scarred with battle damage, the orange paint scraped down to grey undercoat and dull, wounded plasteel. Sealant foam had been liberally applied around one side, where the dropship hull no longer formed a good seal with the Tantamon, all that was keeping the atmosphere in and the void out. Yellow candlelight shone from the circular access port, bored through the left-hand gate. The procession filed through this in small knots, degrees of division between priest, crew, serfs, and infantry forgotten. There were so few of them left now, Abhani Luce thought. They could not afford to dwell on rank. She passed into the ship, past parchments fluttering in the updraft of thousands of candles. The scene before her was even more reminiscent of a temple than the last time she had gone to see her grandmother. The Legio was prepared for a funeral. Her breath caught in her throat to see the shell of Luxor in Victoria, pinned against the far wall by 1,000 extremist-grade maghooks. Every limb was broken, every plate cracked. And yet the Titan lived. Under the watchful glare of Sagitta Auri, the last of the First Maniple's myrmidons, tech priests worked with feverish application to prevent their god machines passing. They took no rest. They wore out their servitors. Under their intensive care, Luxor in Victoria stabilized and began the slow road to recovery. His head was held in a separate cradle, at the height it would be were it still attached, as was respectful. Long bridging cables linked the head to the body, bringing together the two parts of his soul, Mohana Mankata Vai and the machine spirit that dwelled inside his body of iron.
"And the Titan will walk again,"
said a tech priest Abhani Luce did not know, prompted by her sorrow.
"And so will your grandmother. Rejoice! She joins with the machine."
The procession walked on in silence. In front of and beneath the head cradle, a dais platform was held aloft upon a tall scissor lift. A staircase had been set up, leading to the platform. Abhani Luce was among the privileged few allowed to ascend, with the other remaining crew and senior strategos. Through the broken faceplate of the Titan, the Great Mother's immersion tank, cracked and blackened but still complete, was visible. Cables festooned it. Ugly squares of glassite paste patched it. But it functioned, and Mohana lived for now. The last of her daughters came to pay their final respects. Abhani Luce realized that she would never speak with her grandmother again. The Titan crews filled the platform in solemn silence. There were 29 of them, of all grades, all that was left from a legio of hundreds of women. Most bore the marks of the conflict for Beta Garmon, scars, burns, amputated limbs. There had been little time to heal. They were neglected by the Magi, So many of the god engines were in greater need. Many of the women exhibited signs of severance trauma, ripped from the MIU by catastrophic damage, or worse, still attached to the manifold when their titans had died. Restless eyes, facial tics, tremors in the limbs as they relived the shock of engine death. None of them had escaped wounding, and they bore a combination of spiritual, mental, emotional, and physical scars. Apani Luce was ushered to the front with great respect by Goten Mu. She was not the highest-ranked princeps left alive, but she was the closest to the Great Mother, as her last natural granddaughter. Escher lay in an induced coma. The leadership of the Legio hung in the balance, but in this instance, the Order shed some of its military manners, acting more as a family. Apani Luce glanced from side to side, uncomfortable to be set at the head of so many heroes. With the crews were the highest tech priests and Legio support staff. Their numbers were less reduced by the war, although only barely. Sagitta Auri blew out a single funereal note. All those ordained in the cult Mechanicus began to sing a dirge. Even the Vox Omni Machina and the Magos Principia Militaris, for this was an occasion of the most momentous misery. Neocora and Dei Mechanics worked together over desks, cluttered with flashing valves. They struggled to raise the spirit of the Great Mother from her slow slide into death. But they persevered, and eventually the silhouette in the tank jerked and her head rose. Through the scrappy blurts of damaged voxmeters, she spoke. Apani Luce held her breath, so as not to miss a word.
"My daughters," she said. "My children."
Even broadcast by Voxmeter, her voice was a thin whisper, quiet as a graveyard breeze, yet some power clung to it still.
"Children of my long-departed friends, worst of the exiles of House Fi."
Lights blinked in pulsing waves that ran across the equipment desks. Tech priests twittered Bin Harrick at one another and their devices. The Great Mother spoke on over their agitation.
"We have survived this test. Through your skill and dedication, the name of the Legio Solaria will continue."
Her vox feed blared with sudden static, breaking up her words, though she did not notice and spoke on.
"Evermore in defense of all we hold dear. But it will not be the same, Legio. Our gene stocks are exhausted. New crews must be found. If the Magi of Tigris return to Procon, which they most surely will, then the terms will be renegotiated with our ancestor houses. The Knights of Procon will not be deceived again. They covet the power of the god machines for themselves. Men will come among us. This era of the Imperial Hunters is over."
Tension rose between the surviving women and the tech priests. The future depended on the cult leaders. None of the Huntresses disagreed with the Great Mother's assessment. They felt the first cuts of the coming betrayal.
"The universe has changed, my daughters. Horus begins his final march for Terra. This is the end of the old and the birth of the new. Now we can only survive. As your Grand Master, the Great Mother of this Legio, I have one final request."
Her voice was fading, the electronic qualities growing, its humanity dying. Emotion bled away, not quite entirely gone, but her tones lost nuance, so that all that was left in the end was the sincerity of her plea. It seemed to Apani Luce that her grandmother addressed her directly, and maybe that was true.
"Live. Take forward the best of what we were, and bring it into the Legio that will bear our name. Remember honor. Remember speed. Remember cunning. Remember the hunter's kindness to kill cleanly and swiftly, and to let prey live when it should, and cull mercilessly when it should not. I would not ask that you remember me. My time is done. But remember what we...
Discordant roaring boomed from the voxmeters. The day mechanics fussed over their devices. The great mother's voice returned.
Remember what we were together. Remember always. Legio first.
Her speech concluded abruptly, with a musical tone of disconnection. The day mechanics stood still. The hymns swelled. The Vox Omni Machina moved forward.
She is dying. It is time for the Great Mother to become one with the machine. Begin deactivation.
Far back in the dropship, the bell of remembrance tolled. Cast from the broken plates of the Legio's first warlord lost in battle, its sonorous voice recalled all who had lost their lives in service to the Emperor's dream. The Vox Omni Machina gestured solemnly to the day mechanics. They bowed deeply, their mechadendrites and additional augmetic limbs brushing the floor respectfully, then returned to their machines. Epani Luce let out a sob and dropped her head. Three tears fell to the platform floor, each one splashing into a little crown of misery on the metal. A button press began the end of Mohana Mankata Vi's life. There was wind upon her skin. She was youthful again, and free of the tank and the infirmities of age. Her steed Hamage tensed between her legs, eager to surge forward into the landscape before them. The dark forest lay behind. Ahead, there was nothing but golden grasses as far as the eye could see, the kind of landscape a rider could lose themselves in forever. Downy seeds brushed against skin warmed perfectly by the setting sun.
"Come, Hamage," she whispered.
The horse needed no encouragement, but sprang into a gallop straight away, arrowing through the grasslands towards forever. A heaven of sorts. But it could not last. A diabolical laugh cut the sky, making it bleed. Grass wilted where the sound travelled. The earth shook. The wound in the sky spread its bloody lips, opening up on a vista of madness, an ocean of energy where monsters waited to devour her.
"Stop,"
she commanded. But Hamage did not heed her, and plunged onwards. The ground shook and began to break into fragments. Soil frittered away into multicoloured vapour. Grass launched itself at the growing rift like arrows loosed. An invisible force pulled at her soul, dragging her towards the waiting maelstrom of sharp eyes and teeth. Hamage whinnied in panic and fell into the yawning nothingness. The last parts of the prairie vision evaporated, leaving her alone. Otherworldly predators circled, ready to tear her to shreds. Mohana Mankata Vi screamed. This was the reality of the warp. This was what the imperial truth hid. At the last moment, she felt utterly betrayed, and understood finally why the traitors had turned. Wide-winged things with rasping mouths dived at her through looping whirls of impossible colours. She floated helplessly. Through will alone, she shifted herself aside from a swooping beast. Its razored fins caught her, and her soul's arm bled light. The creatures turned, excited by the scent of corpusant upon the Empyrean's current, and dived. She closed her eyes, wishing it all to be over. A great song played. The loudest war horn she had ever heard blasted across the non-space of the warp, and foundry heat beat at her back. She opened her eyes to find herself surrounded by a golden light, and the creatures fled before it. Trembling, she turned. A vast being filled eternity. She had the impression of a human form, though the entity was too large for a mortal eye to encompass. Its blood and bones were grinding cogs, its thoughts living streams of plasma, its eyes lenses the size of galaxies. An iron door appeared in the maze of machinery in front of her. She looked up, searching for a face, and saw a shining entity looking back down that turned from flesh to light to mechanism and back. Through the door radiated the familiar plasmic warmth of Luxor in Victoria's reactor. She sensed its machine soul, more apparent to her now, not almost alive, but truly living, by the grace of her machine god. A voice spoke within her, beautiful as the finest singer, grating as the mightiest machine.
"While there is service, there is life," it said. "It is time."
Mohana Mankata Vai passed through the portal, where for one last ultimate time she joined with the spirit of the Titan. Mohana Mankata Vai was played out by the eerie, monotone screech of monitoring equipment no longer detecting signs of life. Her corpse floated upwards in the amnion, arms wide and cables that had sustained her wrapping around her back in a final embrace.
"She is gone,"
said the Magos Principia Militaris.
"She will be with us forever,"
said the Vox Omni Machina. In the body of the great god engine, clamped against the wall, the erratic, wounded frequency of the reactor steadied and became a little smoother. The site of the Diviner's Needle was abandoned by the bulk of the War Master's armies as soon as it had been destroyed. Their task was done, and they had no need to linger. They crucified the survivors of the Imperial forces as a warning to any who would defy the new Emperor of Mankind, then departed for new fields of war. No one and nothing was left but acolytes of the Dark Mechanicum picking over the battlefield. They worked under glaring clouds, whose interiors flashed with unnatural lightning. Above the weather fronts, a slick of diseased luminance crept across the firmament as the warp bled through the rift created by the tower's destruction. Like their counterparts on Beta Garmin II, the Dark Mechanicum labored to retrieve the broken idols of their mechanical god and return them to good function. They did not follow the precepts of Horus, who, in his dash for victory, would leave his troops to die once they had served their purpose. The engines were far too precious for that, and upon this battlefield in particular, there were 8 prizes beyond compare. Gods of battle of the most potent kind. The servants of machines passed over the wreckage of the Cathedra with augurs and other stranger devices of detection. Pulses of etheric energy, harnessed by forbidden mechanisms, emitted a call to the children of the warp for them to reveal themselves. The needle lay draped over the planet's surface. Its impact was so great it had reshaped the land around it, giving the down structure an illusion of softness, like it was a thing of cloth cast carelessly aside. Its ruin was visible from orbit. Nothing beneath this nation-sized megalith could have survived, and nothing did. The recovery machines of the Dark Mechanicum detected 3 of their treasures, smashed beyond repair under the rubble, the demon souls chained inside gone back into the warp. Not far from the ruin, a 4th was an inert statue, burned out from the inside.
"Search! Search!"
commanded Ardim Protoss, as each disappointment was revealed, fearing all 8 of his abominable children would be found dead.
"The final act was performed here. Find 1 alive, and the keys to power shall belong to us."
He powered his grav impellers to maximum. Their motors drew energy from the warp, and he flew about the battlefield, berating his acolytes to greater effort wherever he passed. A 5th engine was found under a slope of rockcrete rubble. It was intact, and the mechanisms were functional. Protoss's spirits rose, but a few minutes of testing told them the being imprisoned within had escaped, tearing out the souls of its crew as it passed from the Materium into the Empyrean, and leaving them as husks. The day turned to night. The caustic rains returned, washing the land into a quagmire as slick as potter's slip. The water was black now with atmospheric debris, and more poisonous than ever before. Progress slowed. Day returned. Morning passed, then noon. A slight shifting of Beta Garmon's feeble sunlight through the clouds of smoke showing the passage of time. Deluges came and went, leaving the metal of the Mechanicum's vehicles pitted by powerful corrosives. Then, something. By the western flank of the mountain, near the crater made by the uprooting of the Cathedra's foundations, an unnatural heartbeat was found. Green and yellow lightning crawled across the sky with unnatural slowness. Protoss made with all speed to the new site and hovered over the heads of his servitors and priests.
"Yes," he said. "Yes, here, dig, dig."
Attention was diverted to the intermingled mound of rock and crete. Something stirred beneath. Terent Hartek walked the bloody fields of battle that stretched into infinity. Red-skinned horrors made eternal war upon one another, commanded by giant generals wielding whip and axe. He fought with them, striking against anything that came within his reach. At times he was a man, at others a ghost, raging impotently above the throng. Sometimes he was with one of the greater entities, inside its mind, looking out through its eyes as it lashed its whip and slew foes by the thousand. To awake to the taste of blood was no surprise. He came too, still within his throne. Everything was black. He could see nothing. His heart thundered loudly in his chest, and the room smelled of spilt gore. Blood caked his face from a gash across his forehead. The mind impulse unit was still in place in the port at the back of his skull, but he could make no connection to the soul of his machine.
"Moderati," he said.
His voice was hoarse, barely a whisper. He tried to move his hands to activate the manual vox switch, but could not. He suspected a broken back, though the lack of pain suggested neural feedback damage from the Titan was more likely. Neither concerned him. Both could be treated, and would be, for he was a princeps of a warlord Titan, and a lord among men. For a long time he sat there, unable to move. He was buried alive.
"Trapped in a dead Titan. All my crew slain. So much for your promises of power, Ardim Protoss," he said.
His tongue was sore and thick, but his arrogance remained. Time passed. He slept. The anger he had felt these past few months was absent. Strangely, he felt at peace. He came awake to the scrape of stone on stone. Engine noise sounded high above. He looked up, but still he saw nothing.
"About time," he said.
He refrained from shouting, though he wished to. Rationally, he knew nobody could hear him. He must only be patient, and then he would be free. The noise of drills and mechanical shovels came nearer, and his spirits rose. Soon there was hammering on metal. There were people outside, coming for him. He grinned. His service to the Legio would continue. The Titan might even be salvaged. His war was not over yet. Perhaps he might even find this daughter of his and teach her a lesson in violence. The sounds retreated. He waited for his rescuers to come in through the back of the machine or cut into the head. They would know he was alive, surely. Even the most basic of bio-augurs would pick up his heartbeat or his mental activity. Cold fear gripped his heart. They weren't coming. There was a shift. The machine was moving. They were digging it out. He laughed at his own foolishness. It took him a moment to realize that the Titan was not being moved. It was moving itself. A deep, throaty growl sounded behind him, so close that it could have come from behind his head. He craned his neck around towards the Zella door, but saw nothing in the dark. The machine lurched again. Metal screeched on stone. The head jerked, throwing Hartek's head forwards, and he feared further nerve damage. A rushing booming started up, like the thunder of a monstrous heart. He could hear the reactor. All the lights were off. No device functioned.
"Oh, this is impossible," he said.
The machine heaved. He recognized the motion as readily as if it were his own. It was trying to stand, pushing against something heavy. It moved again. Then again, each movement more violent, flinging its head, sending Hartek's own head whipping back and forth. The carapace banged on something, and again there was that terrible growl. The Titan lunged. Metal screeched. The growl turned into a roar. Slowly, with great effort, it rose. Rubble fell from its shoulders, banging loudly off the head. It lifted its face from the dirt, and the debris fell from the machine's eyes, uncovering the small windows set behind the auger lenses. Pale light flooded in, allowing Hartek to see. His body was encased in a shell of rigid bone. The Zella had transformed into a semi-organic abomination. Veined membranes covered the equipment, and thick liquid oozed from everything. Fat arteries pulsed over instrument boards. The forward display was embedded in a film of flesh that looked to him very much like a retina, veined and iridescent. The clear images it had shown were replaced by watery reflections. The Titan was looking across the landscape. Members of the Mechanicum prostrated themselves at its feet. It looked down at its mangled limbs. The armor plates were flowing like melted wax, changing shape. Skull runes rose into them like corpses surfacing from the sea. Elsewhere, the machinery cracked like the shell of a molting crustacean. The volcano cannon lengthened, sprouting a moist mouth that clacked arm-long fangs against metal. The fingers of the Arioch power claw split wetly, talons emerging from ceramite that became bony, then soft, turning into whipping tentacles that dripped with potent acid. A tail of raw, exposed bone forced itself from the rear pelvic assembly, growing a blade of horn from the tip. Hartek watched with horror. When the head changed, he began to weep. The organic mess of it pushed inwards. The back lengthened, the front shook, bent aside, and stretched outwards. Through the last vestiges of the MIU, Hartek felt the change from noble armoured helmet to leering semi-metallic machine face sporting swept-back horns. He thrashed against the bony cage holding him in place, but it would not let him go. His MIU cable mutated from banded metal to long tubular organ that pulsed and sucked at his mind and soul. Each attempt to free himself prompted bony needles to force themselves into his flesh, pinning him in a state of permanent immobile agony. He tried then to push his way into the MIU, but he had no influence over the being that inhabited his Titan. He could see it, but it spared him no attention. He was trapped in the skull of the beast. When eyelids blinked over the augers and oculus, his mind cracked. Terrant Hartek screamed unashamedly, every vestige of military control rinsed out of him in an instant and replaced by howling insanity as the newborn Chaos Titan raised its head to the sky and roared out its hatred of the universe.